All righty, hour number two of our radio program. That's right. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Mike Westhoff is joining Sean Payton with the Denver Broncos, and Coach is kind enough to join us right now. Mike Westhoff, congratulations. Appreciate the time. How you been?
I'm good, guys. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, I saw actually on your Twitter that you were snowmobiling at Jackson Hole. That's pretty neat.
That's my hangout.
What do you like?
This is my fourth. I went out there four times this year.
Oh, really?
I've been going out there for 30 some years. I went to school at Laramie, so I have a good friend that lives in Jackson Hole. And so I started, I would go in the summer and go kayaking and rafting. And then in the winter, snowmobiling. I mean, I can't ski with many artificial parts that I have. So, I bought four sleds. I own four sleds. And then we travel all over and just go. We really have fun. It's really fun.
That's awesome.
I was there. And then I left from there and stopped down to Denver to talk with Sean.
So how did this come about? I know last time you were on with us, you said if you were going to get back into coaching, it would be with Sean. How'd this go down?
Well, just very simply like that. He had talked to me, about coming back and giving him a hand. And, he knows I can't do this forever or going to do that. It's not my goal. But, I have tremendous respect for him. I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't answer the phone for anyone else. I wouldn't. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't even consider it. But, I like him. I like what we did when I was with him before. He knows me. And so, to help him get started and to get the guys going in the right direction, I think that's something I can contribute. And I enjoy being around him. I really do. And he was very excited about his opportunity at Denver. He had tremendous respect for the ownership and the administration. And so, he was excited to get going and, ask me to be a part of it. So I agree.
We hear all the time about building culture, and we know what Sean's done in his career with the Saints, and it was remarkable, and you got to see it towards the end. How do they change the culture in Denver? Like, what are you guys going to be preaching as a staff?
Well, Sean's like a lot of good coaches. Like, I was around Coach Shula. He's very much in tuned to being detailed, to doing everything the right way. I mean, from being on time to the way you handle things, your off-season conditioning, your weight room work, everything on the practice field, there's just a tremendous discipline with doing things the right way. And then he also is, on his side of it, he's the best on-the-field teacher I ever saw in my 32-year career.
Wow.
He's the best. I mean, as a teacher. I used to stand there and listen to him talk about the offense. And he'd be, just in a walkthrough. He'd be telling Michael Thomas and, Alvin Kamara. He said, okay, now we're going to come right in here. You're going to pull right into here. And then he'd say, now take a look. He said, you're right between the quarterback and the safety. He said, now, as soon as you get to here, bam, you pull back out. Drew, there's the window. I'm going to tell you what. I'd be standing there on Sunday, and it was exactly like that. So Sean's a good teacher. And he explores a lot of things. I had a lot of success with them. We were very good. And it's something I think I can do. So, can I do it again? It's difficult to say, as I've told you, you've heard me talk about this before. The special teams has somewhat been diluted in the National Football League. It's just the way it is. And up there in Denver, maybe even a little more so because of the altitude. I mean, I could cover a kickoff up there. Hell, well, it's like playing on Mount Everest. So I have to be a little creative. And I kind of like that. I like that. That challenges me. And that's something I'm very interested in. So, it's just something that I wasn't really looking to do. But after talking with him, it's not hard to want to be a little bit of a part of it. Very much so.
I read the report over the weekend, Mike Westhoff, that you're going to be the assistant to the head coach, and then you're also going to oversee special teams. So is that accurate with your role?
Yeah, that's accurate. Well, we hired a special team, another guy, but a guy used to be with me, Ben Conwica. We were together with the Jets. And so, there's always some finagling with titles and all that kind of stuff, but none of that's important. I mean, I'll help Sean with whatever he needs. He doesn't eat too much. Trust me. he takes care of most of himself. But my part of it, Ben and I have worked together. We know how to do it. And we were very good. You know, those last years with the Jets, we were pretty good. And so us coming back together, and it's kind of exciting to do, to kind of bring it back. You know, when Ben left me, he was my assistant for 6 years, but then, you know, he was a coordinator three different times. And so, you know, it puts all that back together, and good opportunity for him. And I'm looking forward to the challenge.
I know we got to see how this offseason plays out the rest of the way, but you bring in Sean, that means the standards are even going to be picked up an extra notch. Do you think this is a quick fix in Denver?
Here's what I know. The trip up and the trip down can both be very quick in the National Football League. I'm a firm believer in that. Sometimes you think you're riding along and you're doing great, and all of a sudden you fall right down. But it doesn't take much to bring it back. You can pick it back up. I believe that coaching has the biggest influence in professional football than any other sport that there is. I'll argue that. I think it's the most academic sport, and there's a lot of things you can do to help. You know, Sean said to me one time the second year when I was there, after I was there that first year for half a year, the next year after we had a really good year, he said, "Mike, when you came here," he said, "as we started this year, did you have a goal?" I said, "Yeah, I absolutely did." He said, "What was it?" I said, "To beat you. I wanted to be ranked higher than you because you'd never been above the top five." That's where you were. So I knew if I was hanging there with you, we'd be pretty damn good. And I actually finished first, and I did get them. So it's a good goal. And that's how I look at him, because I respect what he's done as a coach. And I just know that it takes time. You have to put things together. But it doesn't take that much time. And I'm not very patient, and I'm sure as hell not going to do this forever. So I'm going to, you know, these guys don't know it yet. They're not 100% sure what's coming, but it's coming. So they might be happy if I were to go back and retire. But I'm looking forward to it. Everything I've seen, the people I've talked to have been so first class that I never knew Denver that well. You know, we never played them that much. I've always been an AFC East guy and then the NFC for a little while. So it's kind of foreign to me, other than Wyoming, where my hangout, so I do know a little something about that part of the country. But a great challenge, really good challenge.
You talk about goals. What is your goal this year?
That's an interesting question. That's a real good question. I always expect to finish ranked very highly. Now, sometimes statistics can be a little bit of a misnomer because of the fact that, we were always a very good kickoff return team with the New York Jets. We were really good and always ranked at the top 1, 2, 3. Well, you know, how am I going to do that out there? I don't know. Am I going to get any chances? They kick the ball in the bleachers. So, you know, these are things I'm going to have to adjust. But I want to be creative and try to see what I can come up with that can help us win. That's my goal, whatever it's going to be. You know, with the Saints, I got Taysom Hill. We ran some fakes. We were the best. I think we had the best punt team in 2018 in NFL history. I'll argue that one forever. I mean, we were really good. Tom Morstead, I loved him. We were first in net. I think second in gross. First or so inside the 10. I don't count inside the 20s. Inside the 10. And the first two games of the year, we didn't punt. That's the good news. The bad news is our opponents didn't punt either. But the rest 15 games, including the playoffs, we gave up 30 punt return yards in 15 games. We're the best that ever did at that group. Nobody ever did it better. So, you know, I have a high bar for anything we do. That's my goal. And I set it for myself, and I'm just going to try to see how good we can get. And I won't settle for anything other than trying to do it a million miles an hour. So they're not quite ready for what's coming. It's coming.
Mike Westhoff here with us. There's a lot that's been said during the last year about Russell Wilson after a poor performance a year ago. What is your view and what's your outlook on Russell Wilson as a quarterback?
To be honest with you, you know, I don't know that much about it, and it's hard for me to comment. And I don't feel comfortable doing that. I remember this because I, And I didn't watch him much this year. I really didn't, as a fan, just looking, watching television. But I can remember this guy playing for Seattle as being a very good football player. That's what I remember. I didn't watch him much this year. I really didn't. And I know that Sean Payton knows how to coach quarterbacks. I mean, so I just have every faith in that he'll be able to, you know, sometimes you have to integrate a player into your offense rather than maybe build an offense around that individual. I'll give you an example, and I'm not trying to compare anybody, but like, you know, we went to two AFC championship games with Mark Sanchez. But Mark did a very good job of fitting into what we were doing. We had excellent defense. I had an all-star team. We led the league in rushing. And so, you know, we kind of all pulled together. And the next thing you know, we're fighting to go to the Super Bowl. And so that's kind of what I believe. And I don't know enough to make a comment as to Russell Wilson, you know, what he did or didn't do. I just remember him as a pretty good football player that I know.
So clearly you still have a close relationship with Sean throughout this process, and now you're going to work for him again, Mike Westhoff. What really excited him about this opportunity in Denver? Because you said clearly he's excited to take the job now.
Yeah, he when he told me and I talked to him about it, you know, there's a lot of things that he liked. He was very, very impressed with the owner. You know, he talked very exclusively how, you know, just the attitude and the whole way that was presented to him. And, you know, and here's a guy that's got some choices. And I don't know what he looked at. I really don't know. I can't tell you. But he was impressed enough that he was excited and really couldn't wait to get going. So something, and I'm not 1,000% sure, it'd be a great question to ask him, but something really got him excited. And so it was fun. I was in there last week and showed me all around. We walked everywhere, talked about some things to do, and he's really, he's into it. He's really into it.
Few more with Mike Westhoff. I know you had to be happy. I know you're close with Zach Thomas, seeing him get into the Hall of Fame.
I was with him. I was with him the other night. We went down to Naples here. I live in Fort Myers, and he was at his son's soccer game, and I was so happy. I knew it quite a while ago. Zach called me. I was very proud. And he called me, and he said, actually, I was in Wyoming. And he said, well, you're the second phone call I made. He said, I called my father, and I called you.
Wow.
And so that was pretty cool. I will be there. We'll be there when he gets inducted. We're going. So that's for sure. That's a positive. I can't wait. I believe he. I think he very much deserves. And, you know, he was a really good player on a really good defense. And that speaks volumes to me. So I couldn't be happier.
So I was watching a little bit of the XFL this weekend, and I'm just wondering if you think this would ever happen in the NFL. Basically, the onside kick is a non-factor these days. They're having this 4th and 15 play where you have to complete it or you know, just get the 15 yards, then you get the ball back. Do you think that's something that the NFL would eventually implement and just get rid of the onside kick altogether?
It's been discussed. I was asked by guy, I think, in the NFL office that's really, really is very bright about talking about those types of things. He asked me several months ago, and I came up with a couple suggestions as to little things that you might do to make it a little more fair, you know, not lopsided one side or the other. I recommended that the kicking team can't touch the ball, obviously, for the first 5 yards. But in the next 5 yards, kicking team would have the availability to bat the ball. That might make it kind of exciting.
Yeah, it would be.
So, you know, things like that. I like thinking in those terms, trying to do different things. I've been involved in quite a few of those over the years. But that's an interesting one. That's interesting. I'd have to see, you know, the XFL, I think it's something that's smart for them to try. Why not? Give it a try. I know the NFL has studied that. I think Baltimore proposed that to something very similar to that to the competition committee last year. I'm pretty sure it was Baltimore. You have to check out. I'm not 100% sure, but I think so. So, you know, those things are being discussed. So it's because you hate to just have a play that becomes a non-play, and that's kind of where it is right now.
Are you pulling that Rex joins you in Denver as the DC?
I'd be very happy. You know, I like Rex a lot, and I think he's an excellent defensive coach. And so whatever happens there, I have no problem. If it's Rex, I'd love it. So however it works out, I think it would be great. You know, Rex is he's done an excellent job with ESPN, but I talked with him and he seemed excited. So I how those things are complicated, and I don't know all the intricacies of it, but I like Rex a lot, and I know he's a doggone good defensive coach. Very good.
Well, Mike Westhoff, congratulations on the new opportunity. I just started to listen to your book a little bit, so I'm enjoying it so far, and I'm sure we'll be talking throughout the year.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you doing that. Yeah, I'm very, very proud of it, and I'm glad you're listening to it. I recorded it,
yeah.
And I wrote every word, so I'm very proud. Thank you.
No problem. There you go. Mike Westhoff, good stuff with the new assistant head coach with the Denver Broncos, and he's going to oversee the special teams unit as well with Sean Payton. So good stuff with them. We'll take your phone calls next, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227, and also get into a little onside offside when we return.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll get to onsides offside coming up in just a moment, but let me take one here real quickly first. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Let's go to Mike in Maryland next up on CBS Sports Radio. Mike, what's shaking?
Hey, what's going on here, Chief? How you doing?
Nothing much. Doing great. Go ahead.
Okay. Here's my thought about Jackson's situation.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore Ravens organization about to make the biggest mistake of their lives is they're going to hit that man with a franchise tag of $45 million. We have multiple Heisman Trophy winners that never even made – we look at Baker and Murray,
yeah.
Never even made to the position that Jackson is in right now. He always played top-tier quarterbacks in the past in the first 4 years of his existence, purely on his special talent. And it's a quarterback league. It's flag football. You can't touch the quarterback. It's all about the quarterback. We must have a quarterback.
Oh, don't get me wrong, Mike. I think it would be a massive mistake if they did not get a deal done. But I don't see the harm in doing a franchise tag from now until March 7th, because then if you can't get the deal done by them, which I would be stunned if a deal gets done by March 7th, then it just gives you some insurance.
Do you know what changed all of that? Is what happened to Chicago. And we got Smith. That changed everything. And then you have these players that want to go on their own terms without having an agent. And that's the first thing that held back. But if Smith can come here and get what he get based on the history of our organization, Jackson should get a big payday.
Okay.
$300 million.
He should,
somebody will pay him.
But Roquan didn't have an agent either. So here's my question.
Right. That's why I said if Roquan Smith can come here and get a contract without his performance has shown in the first 8 games, Jackson came in on pure talent on his rookie year and the second year playing top-tier quarterbacks, Heisman Trophy-winning quarterbacks in the history of our franchise. If we lose this man, it's going to be a while before we even can call ourselves a team without a quarterback. It's a quarterback league now.
Well,
here's
the thing, Mike, and I don't know if the Ravens understand how good they have it with Lamar, but on the other end, we have to ask this question. Does Lamar even want to be there in Baltimore anymore?
Of course he does. Of course he does. He knows the organization is built around him. And like I said, if Hurt's going to get a quarterback, he's going to get that big contract up the road. All of that is slapping him in his face all around. Somebody will pay him.
Well, Mike, I got to let you run. I don't know if you have a ringtone going off in the background or whatever is happening, but I think this is very simple. I don't know, and it just – Hickey, correct me if I'm wrong here, but this is just the vibe that I get from the last 2 years of this stuff. Like 2 years ago, I got why they didn't get a deal done because Lamar Jackson wanted to see what Josh Allen was going to get and the thought that Baker Mayfield was going to get paid as well. We know that didn't happen. Last year, it made all the sense in the world for a deal to get done. And last year, the Ravens kind of basically put it all on Lamar for not getting this deal done. Then Lamar shows up, and he's like, no, I'm ready to get a deal done. So I don't know how much the Ravens want Lamar Jackson back if they're willing to do whatever it takes to keep him. And also, we heard about Lamar at the draft, how frustrated he was. He publicly voiced that. on Twitter and displayed that for everyone to see. And if I'm Lamar, like, I'm looking at this. They never got me a number one wide receiver. They tried in the draft, but they haven't got me number one wide receiver. I know the whole team is built around me. But if I'm Lamar, I'm thinking about going to the NFC and getting traded to the NFC where there's, other than Hurts, there, and I know Rodgers is on his way out, it looks like, so take him out of the conversation. There's not a lot of sustained success at the QB position or guys that have won in the NFC. Like, I get it, Lamar, unanimous MVP. I know he's only won one playoff game, but it's his career so young. I think Lamar can win a Super Bowl in this league, but I just still don't know how much each side loves each other. We know they like each other. We know they really, really like each other from time to time, but how much do they love each other? Because also going into that playoff game, and this is just speculation, but just reading how that week unfolded, it seemed like the Ravens were annoyed at Lamar Jackson, where Lamar had to basically announce that he wasn't playing in the game. Like, I've never seen anything like that, Hickey, where the star player announces before a playoff game that he's not playing. Usually that comes from the team, because the teams usually like to play those stupid games, gamesmanship, and wait to the right down to the wire to inform everyone if he's playing or not. But Lamar, I think, wanted to control really direction of the story and basically just say, hey, I'm not healthy enough to play, and I hope that's true. And I believe in Lamar, but you never know when you get into these contract negotiations.
Yeah, there's no way you can believe right now that the Ravens absolutely want Lamar back, and there's no reason to believe Lamar is dying to stay in Baltimore right now, because both sides are giving you reasons to doubt. And like I said, I mean, Lamar wasn't on the sideline for the playoff game, wasn't tweeting during the playoff game. That speaks volumes. He's frustrated, I think, done. The Ravens seem frustrated and done. Both sides, I think, are going for, it feels like inevitably a split, in part just because this has just kind of run its course.
And I would say that Lamar has more leverage here, because you know if Lamar gets traded, there will be more than a few teams that will be willing to give up multiple first-round picks, probably like 3 first-round picks for Lamar Jackson. The Ravens get those picks back, but just because you have the first-round picks does not mean that you're going to be, and I know, right, the Ravens always get the benefit of the doubt, but it does not mean that you're going to find a player even close to the caliber of Lamar Jackson. And to Mike's point in Maryland, there is more pressure, in my opinion, on the Ravens to get this deal done than Lamar to get this deal done. Because Lamar doesn't get this deal done with Baltimore, someone else will give him the deal. If the Ravens lose out and don't find a way to get this deal done, sure, you're going to get all the draft picks, but who's your quarterback next year? You really going to start Tyler Huntley next year? Snoop Huntley? I know he made the Pro Bowl, but that was like a joke that the guy made the Pro Bowl. The Pro Bowl is a joke. So it's, where do you go next? And when you have a unanimous MVP, even though he's been hurt the last 2 years, tell me then what your backup plan is. And I know they're never going to tell you the backup plan now until they need to use it. And I'm not even saying that this thing ends this year. Like, the only thing that I'm pretty certain about, or I feel certain about, is that they're not going to get a deal done this offseason. And if they don't get a deal done this offseason, this may already be on life support, but then this just goes to a totally different level. Because if this is 3 straight offseasons, Hickey, that they get a deal done, and I know that next year would be the last resort, but what makes me think that it's going to get done, especially with how both sides, even though the Ravens have said a lot more publicly than Lamar, but anytime either side speaks, you never feel encouraged by it. Like, 3 weeks ago, it was 200% Lamar's still our franchise quarterback. Yeah, he's going to be here for the long term. And then, according to the reports, they didn't even talk to Lamar during the offensive coordinating hiring. So this whole thing, it seems off. The whole thing seems messy, and it seems like a couple that knows what should happen, but they're both being stubborn, and now this is starting to get to a level where it just does not look good. Like, this should have been salvageable. This should have already been done. The fact that it's not makes me think it's not going to get done, and the question just becomes, do they trade him this offseason, or do they then trade him next offseason?
Yeah, there's no reason for anyone to believe a long-term deal is coming between the Ravens and Lamar Jackson. They've had opportunities. They've had plenty of chances. It's not happened. Coming off a season where there's a lot of frustration, he's missed, again, six or seven, I think it was seven, including the playoff game. Biggest games of the Ravens season. It's not happening. Not in Baltimore.
Well, this is really the last time it can happen. Because,
but why would it happen this offseason?
I'm saying this offseason feels like it's the last time for it to get done. Because you could use the excuse 2 years ago, Lamar was never going to sign the contract, which I think is accurate, because he was waiting to see what guys like Josh Allen was going to get paid. Then last offseason, you could say, oh, out of nowhere, the Watson thing complicated it, the Kyler Murray thing complicated it as well. I don't want to hear this year, like if Joe Burrow gets a deal done or Justin Herbert gets a deal done, oh, that's why the Ravens couldn't get a deal done. It's now or never for Lamar to get a deal done in Baltimore. Like, throw the last 2 years out the window, throw all the ugliness out the window. If you don't get the deal done this offseason, then it's never getting done, in my opinion. So I don't want to hear any more excuses. Like, the last 2 years, you could talk me into those excuses. But the facts are, this is a guy that's won a unanimous MVP in the league, and there would be at least five teams, I guarantee you, that if you want to trade him tomorrow, would be willing to give up three first-round picks just for starters to go get Lamar Jackson. You know, like three or four of them are in the NFC South. You know, the Jets would do it as well. You know, maybe the Raiders as well. Like, that's just off the top of my head. But say what you want about what happened in the past. You don't get it done this offseason, there's no justification to me. And there's a lot of pressure on the Ravens, because here's what the Ravens risk. The Ravens are viewed as this great franchise. The Ravens get the benefit of the doubt. I've questioned their lack of getting a number one bona fide wide receiver in there. Like a great wide receiver in there. Then also, you don't get the deal done this offseason. It's like, what's your plan? That to me, Hickey, is the most fascinating part about this. If you don't get the deal done with Lamar, I think we could all agree then they're never getting the deal done this offseason. What's your plan after that? Is it to use all those picks and move up in the draft? Or I know you have a really good defense. Like, do you really think in the year of 2023 you could win games 17-14 and that would win you a Super Bowl? No. And this defense is good in Baltimore. But it's not the Bears in the 80s. It's not the early 2000 Ravens, right? It's not the Legion of Boom with the Seattle Seahawks. Now, it's not the Steel Curtain, okay? It's a good defense. But this is not a defense that I go into next year thinking that if Lamar's not there, oh, they're easily going to be able to win game 17-14 in that division too, which is a tough division with the Bengals in it, with the great Joe Burrow. Kenny Pickett, I think, on the rise in Pittsburgh. Maybe Deshaun Watson knocks off the rust from basically missing 2 years. If that's their goal, that they could just plug in any quarterback in the year of 2023, good luck. It will not work in Baltimore. And you will lose people, and people will then start to turn on you because you have something that is great right now, even though he's been hurt the last 2 years. He is a heck of a football player. And the fact that this deal hasn't got done yet makes me really question where that relationship's at. But if it doesn't get done this offseason, it's never getting done.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
All right, we'll get to onsides, offside coming up in a moment. Let me take a few phone calls, though. First, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Let's go to Lee in Cincinnati next up on The Zach Gelb Show. Lee, what's happening, my man?
Not much, Zach, but I just wanted to answer a question to you. I think you kind of answered it yourself before on why Baltimore gets the benefit of the doubt, and it has everything to do with Ozzie Newsome, the fact that he was a general manager before. You're talking about one of the best general managers has ever been, but now he's not. And that is why I think that the Baltimore is kind of on the downside. That's why I don't think they're going to get the benefit of the doubt anymore after this, is because Newsom's no longer the general manager. He took and made that franchise what it is. Now he's not there. Now I'm just afraid of what the future is going to be without him.
Yeah, so here's the thing. I don't know who's to blame here on the Ravens side, because you could say it's the owner, Steve Bisciotti. You could maybe say that it's John Harbaugh. You could definitely say it's Eric DaCosta. The bottom line is, if they mess this up and don't get a deal done, and they're not able to quickly find a replacement, which is nearly impossible. Like, not everyone's the Packers, where you go from Favre to Rodgers, right? Like, look at the Patriots. They lose Brady. They had Cam. Now they have Mac. Now some people are down on Mac. Like, it's so tough to replace a quarterback that you just deem to be good. A lot of people deem Lamar Jackson as great. So good luck trying to find someone else. And if you don't find someone, then a lot of people are going to view that organization a lot differently. So if you want to say it's on DaCosta, and let's say they don't get a deal done, he better go find that quarterback and find it sooner rather than later, because if you don't, that's how you end up being out of a job in this league. Let's go to Jay in Alabama. Jay, go ahead.
What's going on, Zach? Hey, before I get started, what was Hickey like after the Super Bowl? Was he hot take Hickey, or was he Penn State Hickey, like needed to be in the drunk tank Hickey?
That I don't know. I did not watch the Super Bowl with Hickey. I was at the game. Hickey, were you in a sober state after the Super Bowl? You're probably spewing off some nonsense.
No nonsense. I was locked into the game. One beer consumed, I think, even if that, it was actually a lot more food than I ever anticipated. But I guess you want to say I was on my best behavior. But,
gotcha.
Geez, one game you enjoyed.
So, Jay,
what
Hickey's telling you is he had a boring Super Bowl party that his girlfriend dragged him to. That's what he's saying.
Yeah, he's just trying to wrap that up in a bow tie. We know he was getting down. Anyway, no, I think what this all boils down to, Lamar does not want to be in Baltimore. And I think the office front manager there, I think they know it. I think they're just not telling us, but I think they know it. That's the only reason why there's no deal being done. I think Lamar emphatically does not want to be in Baltimore anymore. And like I was telling Hickey when he was screening me, it's like he's giving them chance after chance to get that roster right. And look what they do. They give him broke down running backs and an old ass receiver. And, you know, it's like, come on, bro. And I think he just wants to get down back. He wants to get back home to Florida. I keep saying that, man. If he goes to Miami, the AFC is in trouble. If he goes to Miami with those two hot receivers they got down there, they'll be an offensive juggernaut. But I think what it boils down to, we just got to, like, be real. Lamar doesn't want to be in Baltimore.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, Jay, to say, but then does he not want to be in Baltimore because Baltimore hasn't shown him the love? So, like, it's easy to say, okay, he doesn't want to be in Baltimore, but what's the reason for that? And I do think, Hickey, right, it's the way that this entire contract dispute has gone on for 2 years.
Oh, yeah, I don't think it's the Ravens themselves or the city. I think it's, like you said, I think it's just you want, you know, you're giving yourself and you're giving your all to this team. You just want the same in return. He has not felt the love, and that's part of the reason why he's frustrated.
By the way, coming up later, I do have a problem of you hosting this show yesterday that we're going to discuss. Something that you said yesterday, I got to call you out on. So that's a tease coming up later on the show.
Here we go.
Five questions, five answers. Let's get to Onside's Offside. Hit it!
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, what do you got for me, Hickey?
Zach, we've done a lot of draft talk so far on this show. I'd say one of the guys we talked about a lot is CJ Stroud. Obviously, we think he's going to be one of the top quarterbacks picked in the upcoming NFL draft.
Select Stroud. Let's go, Colts.
The Colts should not select CJ Stroud. There should be one man. Pay the price. Let's get Bryce. But the Colts, along with the Texans, Panthers, Raiders, all teams that have been so far rumored, reported, mock drafted so far to be in the mix to get the Ohio State signal caller. But there is one team that possibly could be sneaking on up into the CJ Stroud sweepstakes, if you want to call it. And that is the Dallas Cowboys, who, according to Mike Fisher of Sports Illustrated, the Cowboys are, quote, intrigued, end quote, by Stroud. Now, obviously, Dallas does have a quarterback, Dak Prescott. He does have 2 years left remaining on his deal. And we've had this offseason already, both Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones mentioning that they want to extend Dak's contract this offseason. So, Zach, onsides or offsides, the Cowboys are actually interested in drafting CJ Stroud.
I think this is the drama Dallas choking Cowboys while being the drama Dallas choking Cowboys. I think they are stirring up the pot of drama. I also think they're sending a message here to Dak Prescott that your play has to be better because the last 2 years, the season ended and you didn't have stellar moments on the field, and it's going to be tough to move up from where they are. It's possible. So I think this is just them sending a message and stirring up the drama. I don't think they're actually interested, though, in CJ Stroud. So I will say offside.
Offside.
All right, with the NBA All-Star Game now in the rearview mirror, the home stretch of the NBA regular season is upon us. Now, Kevin Durant could make his Suns debut as soon as Friday. Kyrie Irving and his new Mavericks team looks to develop chemistry with Luka Doncic.
Boo!
Your guy, Kyrie, or your former guy.
Yeah. Sheesh. I have to get rid of that shirt I have.
Yes, yes. You
the
burn
Uncle
it?
Drew shirt.
You're going to
no,
burn
no,
it on video?
I don't believe in that nonsense. It will probably just... acquire a lot of dust on it and stay in the closet.
Okay. Oh, really? Not going to throw it out?
Nah.
Okay. Just bury it deep in there.
You never know. Maybe he wins me back one day.
That, you know, okay, that's fair. You do never know.
Plus 45,000 for that of happening, but you never know.
You never know.
I never say never. I'm like Mike Tomlin.
Oh, boy. With Kyrie, you're right. You can never say never, no matter what's
going
on.
But I'll never wear that shirt again.
Sure. Holy cow. LeBron James, if you look at other storylines going down this final stretch, called the last 23 regular season games of the Lakers season the most important regular season games of his career.
Yeah, that's a lie.
That's a big, big statement there. In the Eastern Conference, Giannis did avoid major injury and so missed just a few games.
Well, it's
kind of
like an oxymoron, because is there anything really important about the NBA regular season, if we're being fair?
Well, LeBron James, this is the biggest stretch of his career ever.
Oh, you missed the playoffs back-to-back years, the bad luck.
Is taking it very seriously. Celtics getting healthier at the right time. So a lot of different storylines, a lot of different teams with pressure on them down the final 25, 30 games of the regular season. Onsides or offsides, Chris Paul is the player with the most pressure on him the rest of this season.
That's offside, because I don't even think he has the most pressure on him on his own team.
Offside.
I would say Durant has more pressure. When I think of the Suns now, with Durant going there, it's not like, oh, can Chris Paul win a ring? That's now fully Kevin Durant's team.
All righty, let's go to the NFL draft. It's presumed that the Bears will trade the number one overall pick to build around Justin Fields, but not everyone does agree with that logic. Former NFL GM Mike Tannenbaum believes that Chicago should trade Fields and draft Bryce Young with the number one pick. He cited restarting the quarterback clock and Young having a higher ceiling than Fields as the two reasons why the Bears should make the move. So onsides or offsides, the Bears should trade Justin Fields and draft Bryce Young number one overall.
Obviously, Fields was more highly touted coming out of college than Jalen Hurts. But isn't the Jalen Hurts situation from a way that we talked about him a year ago similar to Justin Fields, where you looked at the Eagles and they had more talent around them, but they went out and got A.J. Brown and they did everything they could to put Jalen Hurts in a position to succeed. That's what the Bears need to do this offseason. Because Fields, at times last year, looked like he could be a franchise quarterback, but it was still tough to evaluate in its entirety because he didn't have much around him. Like, he showed me enough last year to make me think, okay, he could be the guy in Chicago. So if I'm the Bears, I would build around Fields instead of trading Fields away, getting the draft picks back that you would get for him, and then, you know, taking Bryce Young as well. Even though I think Bryce Young's going to be phenomenal, I would not trade Fields. I would build around him and still fall back in the draft a few spots and get more picks to even build around Justin Fields even more. So you ask me the Bears should trade Justin Fields and draft Bryce Young? No, offside.
Offside.
Daniel Jones, coming off the best year of his career, is reportedly looking for a mega payday. Now, according to Mike Florio, Jones is looking for at least $45 million per season, and even recently changed agents to help make this request a reality.
You know what's weird about their report?
Sure.
Words are key. Daniel Jones wants more than New York has offered him. Possibly as much as $45 million a year. Possibly. If it was exactly 40, wouldn't it just be he wants $45 million a year? Like, is he willing to go like $5 million less than that?
Maybe still $40 million is a lot, but yeah. Maybe
it is.
42, 43. I saw even you want more than 45, possibly more than 45. So could he be asking for 46, 47?
And the franchise tag somewhere in like the $32 to $34 million range.
32.4 okay. For the non-exclusive franchise tag, which the Giants could slap on him. This season, this past season, Jones accounted for 22 touchdowns and 6 turnovers, did finish 13th in passer rating. Like you just mentioned, while he's asking for reportedly $45 million, Giants could franchise tag him for about $32 million next season. Onsides or offsides, the Giants will franchise tag Daniel Jones for 2023.
I think they should franchise tag Jones and then get the long-term deal done with Saquon. The changing of agents makes me think that Jones didn't think he'd get the long-term deal done with his old agency, and he's pretty convinced that the long-term deal will get done with this agency. So even though we talked about earlier how the Giants should franchise tag Jones, I actually think they'll get the long-term deal done, and I will go offside when you ask me, will the Giants franchise tag Daniel Jones?
Offside.
And finally, Derek Carr, according to his brother David, who was talking on the NFL Network, had reportedly a very good visit with the Jets over the weekend. Carr also mentioned that his brother Derek isn't in a rush to sign with the team, and instead will take his time. And as you know, Derek Carr is not the only big-name quarterback on the market. You have Lamar Jackson, we speculate, will be traded. Aaron Rodgers, we speculate, will be traded. Jimmy G, also a free agent. Those are the four big-name quarterbacks on the offseason market. So onsides or offsides, Derek Carr, of the big four quarterbacks we just listed, will be the third quarterback signed this offseason.
When you mean by that, like, that's also including trades, right? Like, Rodgers getting traded is the same thing? Okay. I think he will either be first or he will be second. I think, now, that's not my order of importance. I would go, if I'm a team looking for QB, Lamar 1, then Rodgers 2 because of the age difference, Carr 3, and Jimmy G 4. But I think Carr is going to push the hand of one team to make a move, and the Rodgers and Jackson timelines, we don't know what they are. I don't even know if Jackson's going to be traded this offseason. Rodgers, I think, will. So I don't think he's going to be the third QB to have the domino fall. I think he will jump either Lamar or Aaron Rodgers. So I will then say offside to your question.
Offside.
All righty, this is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a break. On the other side, I want to delve into more about that Mike Fisher report about the Cowboys showing some interest and being intrigued with Ohio State quarterback C.J. Stroud. We'll do that on the other side in 5 minutes when the Zach Gelb Show continues right here on CBS Sports Radio.